Welcome to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. Whether your family has been on this journey for years or you're just getting started, we're here to support and encourage you along the way. And now your hosts, Lynette Ezell and Tara Melber. Welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. So Lynette, my daughter called home the other day. And we were talking about the approaching of the fall season. We were talking about memories of going to a corn maze. Did you all ever do that?
Oh, yeah.
The corn maze?
I'm terrible at those.
I'm terrible. And I'm not super great with those. And I'd often find myself running into the, you know, the obstacle.
Right.
And after about 30 minutes, I am done. And I want to cut through the stalks of corn and find my way out. I'm looking for the shortcut. So as I was pondering the corn maze, I was thinking that that sounds a lot like my parenting at times. I get really weary of facing the seemingly same difficulties over and over, and I want to find shortcuts to get the results I'm looking for.
Yeah, for sure.
I get really tired, and I don't necessarily want to put in the effort that it takes to meet the need that is presenting.
Mm.
But you and I have found there is not an easy way out when it comes to healing and restoration of our children. Time and consistency are our friends, and attunement to the needs of our children is a necessity.
Oh, that's so true. But so the question becomes, what can we do when we feel like we are trapped in the same negative cycles? Oh, I've been there over and over again. We're going to take our cues from the Word of God today. Romans 12:12 says, be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer.
Well, I love the be joyful in hope, the first part. And the New Living Translation says, rejoice in our confident hope.
Wow.
And the one thing I love about that is that we can be confident in the hope of the Lord, that with the Lord's help, we can pull through and we can get through all of this. And we've learned that science has caught up with Scripture. We've learned that the brain is plastic and moldable, and I'm so grateful for that. And we can enlist parenting strategies that can really help us promote connection and healing in order to get out of those negative cycles.
Yeah. You know, I often say we have to be the adult in the room. I know that sounds simple.
But it's hard in the moment when your kid's pitching a big old fit when Johnny took Sarah's toy. And Sarah, I always say it's not just a three-year-old fit. It's the extra three-year-old fit for a kid that comes from trauma, or it's the extra emotions that your teenager has.
So I have to step back and take a breath and say, what's keeping me from being the adult in the room? In other words, when I get in a conflict and everyone's irritated and I'm expecting my child to be the one to be logical and level-headed, that didn't make any sense.
No, it's really hard. Because I think sometimes that our kids' reactions trigger something within us.
Absolutely.
And oftentimes, if we don't have a strong connection with our children, we're not going to be able to connect with them in such a way that we can be the logical adult in the room. So there's this really smart guy named Dr. Gordon Neufeld, and he says that there's a correlation between a parent's emotional connection to their child or teen and their emotional tolerance of their behaviors.
Oh, that's interesting.
So if you have a really strong connection, let's just say you've got a really close relationship with your biological child and they pitch a big old fit, you're still going to be aggravated and you're going to want to correct it, but you have a little extra patience. But if you don't feel attached and connected to a child, it can be really annoying what they're doing and you just want to, you know, swoop in and correct it all, and they're not going to receive it if you're not connected to them.
Right. There's just no mercy there, no grace.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Grace is in my mind, I think it's the big thing that we need to really consider, because look at the examples from Christ. So when he was on this earth, we know that many times he said something similar to, you know, when are you guys going to get this?
Right.
That was a total translation.
But seriously, but he would say, I've told you.
Right.
Has it not been said that, you know?
Right. But at the same time, he often still taught them through parables. When he was trying to teach something to them, he was teaching it to them in a way that they could receive and understand. So he met them where they were, rather than, you know, bringing the hammer down at the moment and not correcting through grace and love.
I love when after he dies on the cross and the disciples are scattering and we find them in the boat fishing one morning and they look out and Jesus is just,
what's he doing?
Grilling fish.
Exactly.
He's meeting a physical need.
Right.
And Peter realizes, you know, that oh, it's Jesus.
Right. And what did Jesus do for Peter in that moment? He said, do you love me?
He restored him.
He restored him. And he asked him three times, just as Peter had denied him three times. But it wasn't a lecture. It wasn't a look what you did wrong.
That's beautiful.
It was a connection. He was first meeting a physical need. They'd been out there fishing. They were hungry. So he was, you know, providing a physical need for them, but he was doing something in love.
Very gentle.
Very gentle and kind and correcting. So he wasn't saying, you all scattered after I died. What's up with that? I mean, it wasn't condemning. It was connecting first with the need that they had and then being able to gently restore. And we have to take our cues from Christ. This whole parenting gig, the whole marriage thing, it's all about our sanctification. So it's just as much about our journey and our walking into the likeness of Christ as it is about restoration of the children that the Lord has given us to care for.
If you're around me very long, you know I have the gift. I have a sweet friend, Linda, that always says I have the gift of gab. Which works great on a podcast.
It does work great on a podcast.
You know, I feel like I'm Charlie Brown's teacher to my kids sometimes. Well, one of mine has a very hard time articulating feelings.
Yes.
And it wasn't accepted where this child was before, before this child came into our home. And we've sat beside the bed, I've shared this before, for hours, you know, a good hour looking at the moon before I got a sentence.
Yes, and doesn't that just make you want to pull your hair out?
Yeah, because I can fix it.
Well, that's number two in that verse from Romans, be patient in affliction.
Yeah.
And we do have to be patient, and we have to remind ourselves to look at our children through the lens of trauma. And this isn't permissive parenting. Jesus wasn't being permissive when he was cooking the fish and feeding it and gently restoring Peter. He realized that he had to get Peter in a certain state before he could address what the infraction was.
Yeah.
And so the fit still has to be addressed when your kid is pitching a big old fit in the grocery store, but maybe not in a way that you would think would be the right way, jerking them up and saying, stop doing that. It's not helpful and it's not beneficial because they're flipping their lid. They're not in a state that they're going to be able to receive correction at the moment.
Right. And as they get older, you really have to be attuned to your child. I've heard you say this over and over. Some of mine, I know when they can talk and have that conversation. And then I know when their emotion's high. And we just have to just be there. Just be patient. Walk through it. And we can tell when our child is reacting based on fear and stress. Be attuned to that. Are they in fight, flight, or freeze? You know,
what would that look like for your kids? If you have one that's one of those things, fight, flight, or freeze.
One of mine just is flight. If you bring up a topic, this child's not ready for it, he's just going to walk out of the room. He's gone.
Yeah.
You know, another one of mine just kind of shuts down and gets super silent, you know, stays by my side, but just doesn't have a word.
Right. I definitely have a child that goes into that very introverted, very closed place, definitely a freeze child. I often talk about when people ask me, well, isn't it just a teenage drama or isn't it just a five-year-old fit? And yes, it is. But oftentimes with children from traumatic backgrounds, it's like there's this extra layer of it's like emotions on steroids. So they seem to have a little extra. And so we have to just really, really be attuned to that.
I know when I went to college, you know, and I was only an hour away, but I felt like just so isolated from my parents. I grew up very simply and very predictable days.
Right.
And I know you did too. And so when I moved away from college, it was a great place to be. I was at Union University. It was just great. But I really struggled for a couple of weeks of feeling like I'd lost my family. Now, there's no reason for me to feel that way. I mean, it was very—
But you were alone.
But I was alone. And so I noticed when we've launched our children from hard places that they— you know, going off to school and you do all the wonderful things and set up their room and you're there for them. It's a deeper loss than what I journeyed through.
Right. And you have to really, and being attuned to that, you know, for some of my kids that were my biological kids that were raised, you know, from a safe place from the time.
Right.
When they launched, I might not hear from them till after Labor Day.
Yeah.
But for some of my other kids, it requires a daily text.
It does. It does.
Just a check-in. Right. How you doing?
Right.
I think as they get older, this is a really good point, too, when they launch into teen years and adulthood, is that when you see that are you a fight, flight, or freeze person to help them be attuned to that as well? Mm. So if you can say and give them the words to say, hey, I know that you're kind of having a quiet time right now. Can you help me understand what you're thinking? We have words that we use like, you're spiraling right now, and that is not a good thing. Mm-hmm. So if I say you're spiraling, then this one knows, okay, I've got to do something to kind of keep myself from going into that really dark place.
Yeah. To one of mine, I say, you got a lot going on up there.
Right.
You're incredibly creative. Mm-hmm. I know your mind's racing. You've got a lot of thoughts. Can you share some of those with
right.
me?
Right. Right. So as they're young and we become attuned to how they react to stressful situations, then we have to train them to be attuned to their own body.
Yes.
So are they a fight? Do they respond, not necessarily fist fight, but are your eyes dilating? Is your heart beating fast? Are you
ready for an argument?
Ready for an argument. Is your face flushed? So when you, so talking to them about physically, how do you feel? Mm-hmm. Do you feel your heart racing? Then you're going to have to take 10 deep breaths before you can respond
yeah.
in a situation.
Take some time. Yeah.
Because eventually they're going to have a job and they're going to get ticked off and they're going to have to recognize that in their own body and not respond negatively. So we do have to become a student of our own child. We have to teach them to become attuned to their own body. But until their stress response in a situation has been lowered, you're not likely going to make any progress in correcting their behavior because they're working from that lower part of their brain that
right.
doesn't allow any logical responses whatsoever. So we can think about, what can we do in the moment? And we can connect through our senses. So if we can make a connection, an emotional connection in a charged moment, then we can kind of diffuse
yes.
that situation so that we can then, after they've calmed down a bit, be able to have a teachable moment.
And that's what the whole brain child, when you introduced
right.
that book to me, it just, that analogy of the person who is drowning.
I love this analogy.
Yeah, they're just fighting the water, they're panicking, but us as the parents, we're the lifeguard who mm-hmm. can swim out. We put our arms around the child, even though they don't know how to take the help
right.
at the time and realize they need it. And we help them get to shore before we tell him not to swim out so far the next time,
because
right?
Because it seems goofy to
yeah.
think that you're going to go out where the
go
person's
out there and
flailing
lecture.
And go, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to stop this.
Yes.
So it
you
is,
just rescue them in the moment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we have to really, when we say view our children through the lens of trauma, we do have to rescue them out of that moment. And then the teachable moment can come. And you can practice outside the moment. Johnny, what are you going to do next time if mm-hmm. Sarah takes your toy?
Mm-hmm.
One of the really important things that I think we have to think about when we're considering connecting through our senses is, if we think about sight, that we have to get eye contact in
that's
some
difficult
way.
With some
it is
kids.
Really hard.
Yeah.
But to be for littles to say, I need you to look at mommy right now.
Yeah.
Or even for your teenagers to say, hey, I need your eyes right now, so that I know that we're connecting.
Right.
So in that moment, to really be able to have eye contact, and then. I have thought about this before because my husband has said, you know, have you, I would say, I'm not mad. And he'll go, have you looked at your face?
Exactly. Exactly. One of my children brought that up to me over this weekend. And like, Mom, what are you so mad about? I'm like, oh, it's a great weekend.
Yeah.
Loving you being home. You look really mad right now. I'm probably thinking of my grocery
yes.
list or preparing food in an hour.
So think about when you're in that stressful situation, what's your face telling your
yeah.
child?
Yeah.
Because if your face looks angry and your voice is raised and you're stressed and you're exhibiting that, they're going to match that behavior and it's only going to elevate
That's
them
right.
more. So I think sometimes we just have to practice being attuned to our own selves and not having the facial features of the freak out moment where you're wanting to rip somebody.
Grumpy mama on a
grumpy
brain.
Mama.
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. So I think too, when we were talking about, you know, saving somebody that's flailing out in the water, we can't just
yeah.
automatically go into lecture mode
no,
with our
teens.
It just
doesn't work.
It
just
really
does
not.
And it's just my first response, like,
mm-hmm.
okay, I'm going to fix this for you.
Right.
They're not even hearing me.
No, you're right. They do hear, wah, wah,
exactly.
Charlie Brown,
exactly.
for sure. So we can talk to them and give them the vocabulary that they need, because this is going to be helpful if we use, you know, phrases with them over time. It'll
mm-hmm.
help them as they launch into adulthood. So to be able to say to our youngers and then as they grow older, I need your words.
Yes.
I need you to just tell me what you need. Because most of the time, the behaviors that they're exhibiting, there's a need behind the behavior.
Right.
So helping them be able to figure out what the need is.
And you still have to use this with young adults.
Absolutely.
You know, like, what are you thinking about after you graduate? What are you thinking about mm-hmm. this class? What are you thinking? You know, what's going on? Can you help me understand why this grade is lowering? You know, or
right.
whatever. Can help me understand the hurt that you went through in that breakup.
Right.
You really have to help them find the words sometimes. It takes a lot of patience.
It does take a lot of patience. It really, really does. Healthy touch is super important for connection.
Yeah, it is.
Even in high stress moment or not in a high stress moment, but you know, when they're small, it's easier.
Oh,
if they're
so
pitching
easy.
A fit, you can pick them up and kind of give them a good tight hug, and or you can take their hand and remove them from the situation. But even when you're talking about your teenager and you're sitting on the bed and nobody's saying anything, just to say, hey, can I just pat your back?
Shoulder to shoulder.
Shoulder to shoulder.
So shoulders touching, it really helps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. And I think, too, don't you think that you and Kevin done this before where outside of a situation, be able to kind of strategize?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh.
What do we do in this situation or that? So you're preparing your mind and training your mind of how I'm going to respond.
When this happens
when
or if
the
this
drama happens.
And he helps. I didn't grow up with a brother. I don't mm-hmm. think like a man. I just think boys are strange sometimes. You know, I just had the one sister. So he helps me understand, okay, here's what a boy brain's thinking right now, Lynn.
Right. That's huge, mm-hmm. too, mm-hmm. to get some perspective. So even if you're a single mom, gain the wisdom of a godly man within your church, a grandfather figure that can come alongside even to give you that perspective. Because I know if I was raising the boys by myself without David's influence— There's no telling.
Yeah, I know. I'd be a train wreck.
It would be pitiful.
And I have to be attuned to my own stress reactions.
Yes.
You know, like, I'm responsible for Lynette, right?
Right.
And I have to ask the Lord, did the Lord just keep me calm? This
yes.
weekend's going to get busy, or this, we're going to walk into a stressful situation, or I'm taking this one for a surgery. She's mm-hmm. not going to handle those shots well, or whatever.
Right. Right.
You know, I need discernment every moment. Oh,
that's
on
right.
my knees, facing the carpet prayer.
But, you know, when you're doing that, and even if you say that out loud, hey, guys, this is going to be a really
yes.
busy, stressful weekend. So if I have a moment, can you just give me a little bit of grace? But it then teaches, don't you think? It's
yes.
teaching your children, hey, even mom, even dad have stressful situations, and we have to figure out how to handle that. And it's showing them, it's modeling for them in a healthy way how to best deal with those stressful times.
Yeah, you're right. It's taken me a while, but I do know this about the Ezell family. None of us like crowds and heat mixed together.
Oh,
and
that's bad.
No matter where we came from, you know. But you know, that's just one example of we have to talk through it now. Okay,
right.
We're going to go to this park
yes.
and it's hot and there's going to be a lot of people. We're going to do well. We're going to get snacks. We're going to
yes.
stay hydrated, and we're going to go to these little shows that we're going to cool off. I have to say those things to
right.
some of my kids, or they're just going to, like you use the word spiral, they're just going to spiral.
Yes, but you're modeling it, and that's good because you're modeling, you're being honest enough to say, these are the things that really cause me great stress, but this is how I'm going to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. I've noticed in some of my kids to walk into a situation where one time I was taking my mom to the doctor. We lived in a larger city, so she came and got some medical work done, and one of mine was going with me to these appointments,
mm-hmm.
and just the walls of that hospital just really upset this child because it brought back some really bad memories
right.
of a homeless shelter.
Right, right. And talking through those things
right.
and trying to figure out. So there was a behavior.
Yes.
And there was a need behind that behavior.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
recalling this, or I'm feeling that. And so figuring all of that out. Well, we've talked about these smart people before, like Dr. Gordon Neufeld and the people who wrote The Whole Brain Child. But there's another guy named Daniel Hughes, and I love this quote. He said, poor care tends to keep a child's brain in a less developed, less connected state that prolongs survival-based reactivity.
Wow.
And it becomes a habitual
yeah.
pattern, so it makes it hard. So a kid who's always had to be on guard in a difficult environment, because they are in this habitual state, it it keeps them from adapting to living in a safer environment. That's kind of a hard concept.
Yeah.
They're like, really? That's so sad.
Their brain is always on go. Right. I know it took a good 6 to 9 months for one of mine to settle down and sleep peacefully.
Right, right. So we have to expect these behaviors and help them have new coping skills. That's part of our job as their parent.
Right, but be faithful in prayer.
Yes. The ending of Romans 12:12, you cannot take the Lord out of this.
No, you cannot. He's in the boat.
Yes.
You cannot take the Lord out of it. And we can learn all the scientific brain research. You're much better
at that. I'm a geek at that.
Yeah, you are. You have a medical background. And we can learn all the psychology behind why kids behave the way they do. We can learn all about attachment. But we can never approach our families, our marriages, parenting, any relationship without the Lord.
That is exactly right. The Lord, the Word tells us in Romans 12:12 that we can be joyful in hope and that we can be patient in affliction. But the Word of God also reminds us to be faithful in prayer.
Absolutely.
God's the giver of good gifts, and He's the restorer of souls. But we cannot forget that His purposes are to grow us into the likeness of Christ.
Wow. Christ was so patient with us.
Yes. And though He disciplines, He does so in love. And though He rebukes sin, He keeps us close.
Yeah.
So we have to be mindful of how Christ helps us grow as we help our children do the same.
You have been listening to The Adopting and Fostering Home, a resource of the North American Mission Board. For more information about today's podcast and other relevant resources, visit sendrelief.org.